Ash's eyes were already beginning to blacken from his broken nose. "I'm not going to tell you again." I didn't think Ash would actually do it. He'd made no inclination thus far to move on his own accord. Yet something in the manner in which Grouper spoke made Ash get up. "Move!" Kinsley pushed against Ash's back, shoving him toward the pickets.
What's going on?"
Ash was looking around, first at the pickets, and then from broker to broker. "What's going on is that you're going to be our pickets tester today. If what you believe is true and they are indeed fake, I will let you go."
"What?"
Ash asked, clearly confused. "I am offering you your chance at freedom, Ash. That is, if you're brave enough to take it, all you have to do is walk between those two towers. If what you said is true, if those are merely control props, then you'll be on the other side, and I'll let you go. You won't have to fight in the war. You'll be free to make your way in this great wide world of ours," Grouper said, spreading his arms. Moreland smacked Kinsley's arm. "Bet you dessert he doesn't go." "You're on," Kinsley replied. "And you can't force him either." "Come on, Moreland, you can't change the rules after you make the bet. I know you, Kinsley. You'd toss him over if I didn't say anything." I was close enough to both of them that I could have punched them just for their callous smugness. They were casually betting on a life with no more regard than if he was a piece of trash.
I can leave?
Ash was looking for the trick in Grouper's words.
"You're not going to shoot me?"
"Nope. You just have to have the courage to take your freedom. Not many do."
"Courage?"
Ash asked. "Just go so we can get this thing finished," Kinsley stated. "Don't do it," Moreland said. He'd placed a hand against either side of his head and made an exploding noise while moving them away. Ash stared at the pickets, but then looked as if he was going to throw up. "Don't listen to him," Kinsley prodded. "He's just afraid he's about to lose his bread pudding is all." "I heard it feels like someone jabbed a red-hot poker through your eye," Moreland taunted. "Come on, man, that ain't fair," Kinsley once again smacked Moreland's arm. Ash was frozen in indecision. My heart broke every time he looked back toward us. "You can go back if you want. Dying by a sword slice is pretty painful, though. I've watched boys' guts spill all over the ground. Smells worse than Kinsley's cooking," Grouper told him. "Go on, kid, take your freedom." It sounded so sincere that I think I would have gone if I were in Ash's position. Ash would take a step and then look over his shoulder. Moreland was waving him to come back, Kinsley urging him forward.
"Don't,"
I said weakly. "Watch it, girlie. You want to join him? One more word from you and that'll be the case," Grouper had spun on me. The severity in his eye left little doubt in me that Ash was heading for his death and that the brokers were waiting ardently for it, practically drooling. Ash's faltering steps picked up as he got closer to the fence. He kept glancing over his shoulder, probably expecting one of the brokers to be placing his rifle up by his shoulder in preparation to shoot. "Damn it, he's going to go," Moreland said. Ash was within yards of the pickets when he started running. Within a few strides he was at full speed, and he was through. My heart leapt. For a split second I envied him as he'd escaped. Then his steps, once again, faltered, his right foot catching the back of his left leg. He went down face first, not even sticking his arms out to brace the fall. A cloud of dust rose from where he'd hit. The brokers, even Moreland, who'd lost the bet, were laughing. I hated them for that. Ash's legs, no, his whole body, was shaking violently. I couldn't stand to look, and I couldn't turn away. His face was turned to us, so even through the dirt I could see the heavy flow of blood gushing from his nose and mouth. "He made it farther than I figured he would," Grouper said, as he turned toward us. "Move, you scabby lot." It took a second for the shock of what had just transpired to reverberate through the crowd. There were some who cried out. Others stood in silent disbelief. Most of us, just turned and plodded on. There was nothing more that could be done for him.
They killed him, Winter. They knew what they were doing.
Cedar kept turning as we walked, keeping an eye on the brokers. What if we rushed them? They couldn't stop us all.
All is the key, Cedar.
We'll never get everyone to do it. Anyway, how would we let them know to act even if they would?
I'll just charge one of them and scream for help.
That won't help. They stand a better chance here and now than they do out there. You and I know that. But all that will happen is you'll get yourself killed. Then I'll be alone.
Cedar put her head down as we walked through a large gate, leaving any chance of a rebellion behind us.
I didn't realize what was happening in front of me until the group stopped moving. Much like Cedar, my head had been down. I walked right into the boy in front of me. With a grunt, I apologized.
"Nice knowing y'all," Kinsley said. He held a bronzed metal box in his hand. He pressed a large black button in the center of it, and a low but constant beeping began.
I took a moment to look around. We were enclosed in a large electronic pen. The brokers leered at us from the other side, the distance side. We were out of our area, but still effectively trapped.
"You all saw what happened to your friend, right?" Grouper asked. "So I strongly suggest you don't stray too far."
And with that, they left. The kids closest to the pickets began to push back, so that any personal space we had claimed was reduced to the point where people were pressing in on us from all sides. Cedar shoved a few aside and then pulled off her small backpack. She grabbed a book and began to read. Suddenly she glanced at me.
"Don't look at me that way. What are they going to do, send me to war?"
She had a point. There wasn't much more they could do, even if they were here. The crowd was jostling around, trying to find some comfort in the corral we found ourselves in.
"I swear if one more person bumps into me, I'm going to have a conniption," Cedar bellowed.
I smiled. I didn't need to know what conniption meant. Cedar's face was the only explanation I needed. The sun was arcing over the sky. Tala would not once come to seek me out. I attributed that to the fact that moving through the throng would have been nearly impossible, though I knew, if he'd really wanted to, he would have found a way. My disposition was souring rapidly. I was thirsty, getting hungry, and my feet were hurting from just standing here after hiking all day. Still, it was Talo's no-show that irked me the most. Even if he showed at this point, I don't think I'd be able to stop myself from having one of Cedar's conniptions. The sun was beginning to set. The majority of the kids had sat down, or if they were daring enough, moved back towards the pickets a little so they could actually lie down. I was beginning to think that this was how they would get rid of us. We'd starve or die of thirst, or if we were really desperate, we'd see if we could get past the pickets. It was so tempting. There was so much empty space between the towers. If it came down to it, I wondered how many would take that way out. It was far easier than dying of thirst. Ash hadn't suffered much, but the memory of his twitching legs would haunt my dreams for as long as I lived, which right now didn't seem like that big of a deal. I finally caught sight of Tala. He'd been staring at me from about 20 feet away, but when he saw me looking at him, he turned away. "There's more bears in the woods," Cedar said, looking up from her folded legs seated position.
"What does that even mean?" I asked.
But she was already back reading her book. Some folks around her glanced curiously at what she was holding until Cedar would growl or make an aggressive move toward them. I noted that of everyone here, she was the only one with a nice, empty cushion of space around her. I was getting close to sitting. The only thing keeping me from doing so was Tallow. He hadn't sat yet, and somehow it felt like a defeat if I sat before him. I didn't say it made any sense, I'm just saying that's the way I felt. I was having that internal dialogue when I heard a deep rumble that sounded like a hungry grizzly bear. Was this the bear in the woods Cedar was talking about?
"What's that?"
Cedar asked, standing up. The rest followed suit quick enough,
even those who had found a way to fall asleep. As one, we were staring toward the approaching sound, which was quickly growing closer. I'd seen animals walk in and out of the pickets. They were not a barrier to the animals. They seemed to only block humans. So if something big was coming this way, there wasn't much we could do to stop it. I had a rising sense of dread. Had Brody been tricking us the entire time? Was there really no war? Were we just food for some prehistoric beast? I'd seen the books about dinosaurs, but I wasn't sure if I believed in them or not. At least up until this point. Get out of my way. Cedar was pushing through a boy twice her size. He acquiesced without so much as a minor protest. Come on, Winter. She was struggling to get to the front. I couldn't for the life of me figure out what a rush was. See the lights? I could see something, occasionally, on the uneven terrain, and then it finally became steady. At first there were only two, then four, and soon I just stopped counting. Trucks, Cedar said triumphantly. Trucks? The word sounded funny in my mouth, like I was saying it while I was chewing. A mode of transportation. Cedar handed me a pocket dictionary. What are you doing with this? I asked. You have no idea how many words I come across in these books that I have no idea what they mean. I cried a little bit when I found a dictionary I could carry along with me. How many books do you have in that pack? I asked. She looked at me sheepishly. Let's try this a different way. What else do you have in that pack? She was again silent. Cedar, we're going to war. How much time do you think we're going to have to read? However long it is, it won't be enough. Kids were oohing and aahing, some gasping, a lot of mumbling between groups. A decent number began backing up toward the pickets and back towards home. I now knew why Grouper had killed Ash. It wasn't just a show of power or being a world-class jerk. It was a lesson. It was a demonstration of what would happen if we tried to leave. How many citizens of Distance would be dead right now if not for that lesson? A dozen? Two dozen? I know I wanted to make a run for it. If I had bolted for the picket boundary, how many would have attempted it with me? There was a high-pitched squeal as the trucks came to a stop. Wow, I didn't think they'd be that big. Cedar was still advancing while everyone else was either stationary or still trying to find room to back farther away. Armed men jumped out from the rear of the lead truck. They wore uniforms similar to the brokers, but they were green instead of blue. The men got into two lines about 10 feet apart, starting at the enclosure gate and ending at the back of the lead truck. They had created a path for us to follow. Another man, this one absurdly tall, exited the front of the truck and came to the very edge of the fence. Citizens of Distance, the war is not going well in this sector. It is imperative that you get to the front lines as soon as possible, as ferals have been spotted close by. We must do all that is necessary to preserve the lives of those still in your town. The fear in the crowd went to the maximum level at just the mere mention of the word ferals. I knew the ferals were involved, and still, just to hear it confirmed, made my knees knock together. I noticed that he did not mention the other areas we were at war with. Had Brody heard wrong, or was this man purposefully hiding that information from us? Do you think he really means we? Cedar asked sarcastically. I doubted. If this war is so damned important, why are we given swords and not those fancy rifles they're holding? I think I know why books are no longer acceptable, I said to Cedar. She looked at me to continue speaking. People start to ask too many questions. We need to get all of you into these trucks, so come on, he urged the citizens. Cedar and I were already up by the front. I walked close to the men on our left. They had helmets on, with a dark glass that hid their features. I stared into more than one, wondering what they were thinking behind that mask. Did they know what was going to happen to us? Did they care? Were there any among them as sick of what was going on as I was? This was another problem with books. Sure, they opened up your mind to ask a lot of questions, but the answers? They were left to you to divine on your own. Smoke issuing from the back of the truck was cloying, thick and foul. My eyes watered as I climbed into the back. Cedar followed, but she was entirely too busy looking around to be bothered by it. A heavy green cloth covered the back of the truck, so there wasn't a whole bunch to see. I was feeling slightly claustrophobic by the time they closed the tailgate. I'd counted. They'd put 30 of us in this truck. Tallow had almost made my heart stop when he didn't crawl up and in until number 29. I would have thrown one of Cedar's books at him if she didn't have a death grip on her bag. Before the truck pulled out, a helmeted man climbed in and told us there was to be no talking. Our truck started to move away, and the truck behind us moved to where we had been parked so that it could be filled as well. We rocked side to side and back and forth as the truck went over the terrain. Again, I began to weigh our chances. There was one armed man. His rifle was pointing up in the air, and he was leaning back like he didn't have a care in the world. How hard would it be to overpower him? We could jump out before anyone knew and we'd be free. Or better yet, kick him out, take the gun, take over the truck, and we'd be able to go wherever we wanted. It was a fantasy, of course. I'd never be able to get through the other riders to get to him without him noticing. But why wasn't Tallow doing anything? He was sitting directly across from the man. If he just reached out, he could take the weapon. Ultimately, I knew why. It was fear. Fear had us all rooted to our seats. Obviously, there was the fear of being injured, or worse, killed. But maybe the biggest fear of them all was the fear of the unknown. What was even out there? It could be worse than distance ever was. And with the threat of ferals running around, nobody wanted to be caught out in the open. Anyway, the men in green had yet to give us weapons. We'd be defenseless against a savage enemy. Another truck caught up to us after it filled up. Soon, all of us going to war would be in these massive, rolling machines heading to who knew where. Cedar was somehow reading, although I could barely see my fingers in front of my face. The ride took much longer than I'd expected, and once I had resigned myself, I realized just how tired, hungry, and thirsty I was. I drifted off. In my dreams, I was on a heavy iron vessel crossing over an incredibly large body of water, the likes of which I'd never seen and could barely imagine even existed. I was standing on the deck, looking out across the blue-green expanse, being gently rocked back and forth. It was somehow soothing, comforting even. "Winter," Cedar had nudged me. "We're here." And I think she was right. I could almost make out the top of a peak on some mysterious faraway land. A pinch on my arm woke me with a start. "What?" I was rubbing my arm. "We're here." Distantians were jumping down off the back at the urging of the man that had been riding with us. There was yelling off to our side. "Hurry up! Get in line! Get your food and water! Here's your sword! Don't poke yourself!" This was followed by laughter. The sun was coming up as I dropped down. People were scrambling about as the men in green yelled a variety of commands, taunts, and orders at them. Chaos was widespread as I watched those I'd lived around run back and forth, trying to figure out where to go and how to get there. Some were crying as helmeted men shouted at them. Some cowered. A few had even wet their pants. I stood there, taking it all in. I was scared, but I wasn't panicked, and that was the key. Brody had told us that to be scared was all right. Scared made you careful, but panicking made you blind to the dangers around you. "This is really a lot to take in, isn't it?" I turned to see the tall man who had instructed us about our need to help in driving back the ferals. I craned my neck to look up. "It is. This can be a very trying time for new initiates, but you seem strangely calm. How is that?" He was peering at me with eyes that were too small for his broad face. "I'm not the type that is easily upset," I told him, hoping the banging of my heart in my chest didn't reveal that lie for what it was. "Huh." He just kept staring. I don't even think he'd blinked once.
Interesting. You were taken from your home, placed into a machine you've never been in, told you were going to fight some of the fiercest opponents ever, and yet you seem rather casual about the whole thing. What's your name?
I thought about not telling him. In fact, I wanted to defy him for every reason he'd just listed. Then I thought about lying. But those eyes, the way they were looking at me, trying to peer past and deep down into who I was, he'd know. He'd know that I was lying. And he'd kill me. I was certain of that. He'd drive me down into the ground without a second thought.
Winter, I told him.
Winter. What a strange name. Follow me. He turned and started walking, never bothering to look behind to see if I was following. I struggled to keep up with his stride. Cedar had caught up.
What are you doing? She asked softly.
He told me to follow him.
I am.
Are you sure that's a good idea?
Is it a better idea not to? How much of a choice do you think I have?
I'll stay with you. We went a little farther until we came to another vehicle. This one was much smaller than what we'd ridden in. There was a metal shell over the passengers, as opposed to canvas. He didn't look overly surprised when he turned, and Cedar was next to me.
My name is Major Alsenpater.
There's just something about you that reminds me of my daughter.
Your daughter, sir? I had to ask.
Cedar gasped. Families were expressly forbidden, at least in distance.
Yes, the world is a complicated place these days. I've just told you a secret that could get me and my entire family killed.
Why then? Why risk it? You don't know us.
Like I said, you remind me of my oldest, and there are a lot of us that don't agree with the war.
I couldn't help but feel like I was either in a dream or being set up. Was he waiting for me to say something bad about the overseers?
You're suspicious. I understand that. You don't know me and have no reason to trust me. Hopefully what I am about to give you will go a long way to rectifying that.
I just wanted to leave, to be away from his piercing eyes. He reached into the back of the truck and pulled out what looked like two very small rifles.
Have you ever seen something like this? He asked,
keeping them low so only Cedar and I could see.
They're revolvers, she replied.
The major nodded in appreciation.
Good. Now I'm going to do the stripped-down version of how to operate these. You press here to release the cylinder. When this is open, you put the bullets in, lead always facing outwards.
He smiled at his own joke. I was still debating on whether or not to trust him, as there was no room for humor.
Close the cylinder back, you'll hear it click into place. Then you're ready to fire. This is the trigger, he said, pointing to a small, curved piece of metal. This is a dual-action mechanism, meaning that pulling the trigger pulls the hammer back like this, and then it fires. Or you can manually pull the hammer back, but that makes the trigger much, much more easy to fire, so be careful that way. I don't know if I'm helping you by giving you both these.
I grabbed mine tentatively. Cedar had snagged hers and was already packing it in her backpack.
Ammo? She asked. The major gave us each a box of ammunition. There are 50 rounds in each box. This is a 44 Magnum. One round will be more than enough to kill a man. Use them wisely.
I know that look, Winter. Don't ask too many questions.
Your friend is wise, the major smiled.
It was the first time I saw anything resembling warmth from his eyes.
I see the questions, Winter. I understand them, but I don't have enough time to explain any of it. Suffice it to say, I want a better world for my family. And I think you might play a role in that.
How could you possibly think that?
Just because I'm not running around like a scared child does not make me a revolutionary.
What?
I exclaimed in surprise. Brody is a friend of mine.
Well, this is blowing my mind. What's going on? Cedar asked.
Brody said I'd recognize you the moment I saw you. He wasn't wrong. Winter, the stoic. Cedar, the determined. And Tallow, the protector.
Where is this third?
They had a falling out.
Cedar!
Well, it's true.
Then one of you will have to hold on to one of these for him until such time as you reunite. The major reached back into the small truck and pulled out three old worn scabbards. I can't say these are the finest swords ever made. That art has been lost, as with so many other things. But they're plenty better than the scrap metal your townsfolk are being issued right now, and before you say anything, yes, I wish I could give these to everyone, but I can't. First, I only have these three, and anyway, it would be noticed and then traced back to me. Cedar had drawn her own sword out and was ogling the shiny blade. I don't like being used, I told him, not taking the proffered scabbard. It seems that I am just a pawn in a much larger game, one that I don't know how to play, or what the rules are. It will all become clear, Winter. You'll see that this is just the first step of many. But you have to survive this first step. That's what I'm trying to help you with. Just take us away from here. Then you could be certain we'd be safe. I don't know how much power you think I have, but I can assure you that it is much less than you think. Getting you these guns and swords is about the extent of it. That's not enough, I told him flatly. Winter, I don't want to have to give this stuff back. It's nothing more than a bribe, Cedar. We're being used. We've got a firearm and a better sword, Winter. He's given us a huge advantage. And how much do we have to pay for them? The question could have been directed at the Major or at Cedar. Our lives? Our souls? How much? Faith is a hard concept to comprehend when the world has been deprived of it for so long. But I'm asking you, Winter, to have just a little in me, in Brody, in those of us that are trying to rise up against those that would hold us under their thumbs. You're right, I don't trust you. I trust Brody only marginally. The only people I truly trust are Cedar and Tallow. And yet Tallow isn't here, is he? I am, though, the Major said. I don't think he meant it like the barb it felt like. Yet it stung. I'm offering help. Isn't that enough? I don't know what I expect, Major. You're telling me if I live through a war that I have very little chance of surviving, that I will have only just begun? How should I feel? I'm telling you to live, and that we'll deal with the rest as it happens. Now get away from me, you vermin! I've already told you I do not have any extra rations, the Major yelled at us just as some of the other soldiers were approaching. These pukes bothering you, sir? One of the soldiers asked as he shoved me. I almost turned and punched him before Cedar grabbed my shoulder and pushed me away. We're sorry, sir, she said demurely, her head and eyes cast down. Let's go, she hissed at me under her breath. I couldn't figure out why she was clutching me so tightly as we walked away, almost in a huddle. Let me go, I told her when we were a few paces away. Your pistol was out, Winter. Your stubborn arrogance is going to get us all killed. She was busy wrapping her jacket around us. Thank you, Cedar. I'd been so intent on giving the Major a piece of my mind, I'd forgotten my surroundings. I was determined to not let that happen again. You saved me. You can return the favor later. Now put that thing away and let's get back with everyone else. I noted with satisfaction that Tallow was looking around frantically. When he spotted us, he settled down and pretended like it wasn't us he'd been seeking. Anger welled back up in me, though, when he didn't come over, but rather started talking animatedly with his friends. The bravado they were displaying was in direct contrast to how I knew they were feeling. Terrified. Just like the rest of us. Everyone now had swords. The scabbards were the same as Cedar's and mine, but I'd seen enough of the swords being handed out to realize they were inferior, scratched, pitted, and in some cases even dull. Some of the people had paired off and were sparring, practicing what little they knew. The soldier trucks started up and began to pull out. This is it? Cedar asked. Now what, Winter? Do we leave when we can? I didn't have an answer. I was torn. These people had no chance, and most would run at the first sign of trouble. Just because we couldn't protect them didn't mean we shouldn't try. I don't think I can leave, Cedar. But you should.
I had a feeling you were going to say that. Am I that predictable?
In some cases, yes.
This group is going to draw the ferals right to them. They're loud, unruly, and worse, untrained. Winter, staying with them means the end for us.
Are you so ready to abandon these people we've known our whole lives?
We're probably related to some of them. My birth mother only had me, but how many did your birth mother have? Many of us could have the same father. You might be my sister, Cedar, or Talos, or even Ashes. Has that ever occurred to you?
I do feel attached to my friends, Winter, but not because we might be genetically related.
I don't think of them like that. We're not supposed to think of them like that. That doesn't make it right, Cedar. Some of these people we would be leaving are our brothers and sisters and friends. Who else are we doing this for?
Talo isn't going to leave.
Do we just abandon him, too?
Just because he doesn't want to be with me anymore doesn't mean I want him dead.
I've read about this a lot in my books.
How's it turn out?
As a rule, not so good. One true love usually dies saving the other.
All right, everyone, we need to create some shelter.
Talo had climbed onto a boulder and was yelling to the crowd milling about, unsure of what they should do next.
Who died made you boss?
One of Talo's friends yelled out in jest. Another picked up the chime, but this time it was not a joke. The same boy, Durango, advocated that they should move away from this spot and find a way out.
We don't know what's out there, Talo replied.
We know there's nothing in here, Durango said.
He was a gangly boy, all elbows and knees, but he had grabbed the attention of a fair number of people.
Whoever wants to stay and die can. Whoever wants to win this thing can come with me.
I don't think splitting up is a good idea, Talo told him.
Great, then you'll come along. Just don't get in my way.
Adversity always causes divisiveness, and divided we fall. Cedar was watching intently.
That in your books, too?
Sorry, forget I said that, I told Cedar when I realized how sharply I had said those words.
I was anxious for Talo.
What she said made perfect sense, even though she had just suggested we leave. Durango and his closest friends prodded at the crowd until they felt that they had the numbers.
All right, then, let's get a move on before we get caught out here in the dark.
Of the 250-ish of us out here, nearly 200 went with him. They figured, falsely, that he somehow had a plan, and that a plan meant safety. Talo was scanning what was left, and most of them had their eyes on him, me included. I was wondering if he was going to throw his lot in with Durango. I'd about given up hope on him, with the way he was pensively watching them depart. They were headed for the tree line some few hundred yards away. He turned back to face us as the majority of Distancians faded into the thick underbrush.
All right, this is as good a place as any. I want to get some people to help me move some rocks. We're going to make a protective barrier against whatever comes.
I didn't think he had it in him, Cedar said. We staying?
For now.
I wasn't overly keen on our placement. Yes, it did afford wide open views to whoever might come up on us, but it left us no avenue for escape, and no place to hide. There were pickets not more than a quarter of a mile to our rear, so that direction was out. I'd read in one of the books that nothing was more dangerous than a cornered animal. I sincerely hoped that applied to humans as well. The work was hard, and the sun was once again making its downward journey by the time we were nearing completion. I had to admit the wall was fairly imposing. It spanned about 30 feet and curved back at both ends like a giant U. It easily held all of us with room to spare. It came up past my waist, not enough to stop someone, but enough to slow them down. It would make sufficient cover, and Cedar and I could fire our pistols over it.
I thought you were leaving, Talo said.
I was leaning up against a rock, wiping the sweat from my brow, a large swig of water in my mouth. I was thankful it was there, and I had to take the time to swallow, or I'm pretty sure I would have told him to go take a flying leap.
Would you rather I had gone? I asked, turning to face him.
That caught him off guard.
That's not what I meant.
And yet that's what you said.
Don't put words in my mouth, Winter. Brody's plan was for you to leave at your first chance. I'd say you've had more than a few by now.
I still can. I immediately regretted saying those words. Why was my pride and his always getting in the way of what we really wanted to say?
I loved him, and I felt like he had betrayed me. I just wanted to melt in his arms. That was, of course, after I beat him up a little for putting me through this.
Well, if you're going to leave, I suggest you do it before it's dark.
And with that, he turned and left.
If I could have picked up the rock I was leaning on and thrown it at him, I would have.
That went well, Cedar said, springing up from the other side of the wall.
Are you spying on me? I asked indignantly. I've been sitting here reading for the last half hour. You're the one that came over.
You do know you're on the wrong side, right? I'm away from everyone, so I think this is the perfect spot.
A solitary scream riveted everyone's attention. This was followed by another, and then by a chorus. People stopped what they were doing to look at the distant forest. A clash of metal could be heard. Cries of pain, anguish, and anger filtered through the woods and to our attentive ears.
You know, maybe you're right. I think it's best that I get on your side, Cedar said, as she scrambled over the wall.
The fighting seemed to draw closer and then pull farther away. Indistinct shouts could be heard. It was terrifying from here. I couldn't even begin to imagine what it was like out there, having people around you that wanted nothing more in this world than to see you dead. What a horrifying situation.
Ferals? Cedar asked me.
What makes you think I know?
I started to see movement at the fringe of the forest.
To arms! Tallow shouted.
Cedar and I had already drawn our swords.
That these people needed to be reminded to grab their weapons did not bode well.
I looked around. As I had predicted, we were effectively trapped by our own defense.
Everyone pressed up against the rocks, trying to get a better view of what was happening. There was an expectant hush over all of us. No one spoke for fear that they would miss some clue as to what was going on.
A figure burst forth from the trees. My hand reflexively gripped my hilt harder. This was it. This was what I'd been training for so hard the last year.
So then, if that was the case, why was I feeling so sick to my stomach?
It's Durango! Someone shouted out.
Jerk. First to lead them out, first to run away, Cedar said as she looked on.
I agreed wholeheartedly with her.
More Distancians began to emerge. But not many.
Nothing like the numbers they'd left in.
50, maybe 60 of them were running toward us.
Most were without weapons, and the fact that they kept looking over their shoulders was proof to me that they were being followed.
They're going to bring whoever is out there right to us, I snarled.
Durango and company were about halfway across the expanse when the whoevers finally showed. They were half-naked men and women screaming and chasing them. The little they wore appeared to be made of buckskin. Their skin was painted in brilliant orange and yellow hues. Even from this distance, it was easy to see the savagery in their features as they chased the remnants of Durango's contingent. They ran effortlessly, overtaking the much slower retreaters. The sound of stone hammers crashing down on skulls rent the air. Our people were falling, being dragged down like prey to wild dogs. Not one Distancian turned to fight.
We need to help them. I was halfway over the wall when Cedar grabbed my leg.
It's too late, Winter, she said, pointing.
There were hundreds of the feral warriors pouring from the woods.
Oh, God, I said.
She left, too, Cedar informed me. But not with Durango.
Durango and those nearest to him were just getting to the edge of our protective barrier when the ferals stopped about midway between the trees and us. There were some finishing off the unlucky stragglers, but for the most part they were just staring at us.
When the whimpering from the dying stopped, we noticed a great line of warriors, standing perfectly still.
I climbed the rest of the way atop the rock and thrust my sword up into the air. "Come and try," I shouted, shredding my voice. A warrior in front thrust his hammer into the air and whooped a war cry. As one, they turned and paced off back into the trees.
"They're dead! They're all dead!"
Durango had nearly leapt over the rock wall. He lay on the ground, blood and tears intermingled on his face as he wept. "No thanks to you," I told him. He said nothing. "This is not the time, Winter," Tallow admonished me. I spun on him, anger and adrenaline fueling my words. "When is the right time, Tallow? After he leads another group of us off to the slaughter? Would that be a better time?" I didn't realize it then, but I was pointing my sword at his chest. "Why aren't they attacking?" Cedar was watching the retreating ferals. "They came out of nowhere, silent. Truly like mountain cats, they just descended on us. We didn't even know we were being attacked until the screaming started. It was, oh God, it was horrible." Durango was crying again.
Chapter 12. The Klondike and Distance Camps.
"So it seems that the ferals have started the bloodshed," Hayden, the leader of the Klondikes, stated. He was off to the far right of the action with his second in command, Serod.
"The ferals killing Distantians. Who cares?" Serod stated, bored with the whole thing. "I'd be more impressed if they were killing Hylians."
"Did you see that girl standing on the rock?"
"Whatever."
"She was magnificent. If there were ever a true female warrior, she is one. She wouldn't stand a chance against any of the women in our tribe."
Hayden had his doubts about that, but kept them to himself. "I want to meet her."
"Are you crazy? We need to seek out the Hylians and either catch them completely off guard and destroy them, or make a peace accord until such time we can square off against each other."
"How well has that worked for our people in the past, Serot?"
This time Serot was quiet for a moment.
"What are you suggesting, Hayden? An alliance with the Brutons?
What about them?"
He was pointing to the rock enclosure. Serot snorted.
"Them? They're chattel. They're just in the way until the real fighting begins. The ferals are locked on. They'll destroy them as soon as the sun sets. I say let them. Maybe if we're lucky, they'll put up a decent fight and take a bunch of the savages with them."
"And what if they win?"
"Really? So what, Hayden? Don't let one girl cloud your judgment."
"I don't think she's just any girl, Serot."
"You're not going to change your mind, are you?"
"I've seen that look before, Hayden. Come on, think of all we've gone through for just this war. Don't blow it over them," he said with disdain. "Get the archers up here."
"All of them?
Are you sure?"
"Serot, do not forget your place. I do not need to explain myself to you."
"I'm sorry. I sometimes forget who we are on the field since we've been friends and walker mates since we could begin remembering."
Hayden blinked and finally looked at his friend.
"I'm sorry as well, Serot. You're right. The ferals will attack tonight. If we can inflict grave damage on them while their attention is directed elsewhere, I wish to do so. We've lost far too many people to the soulless ones. I would like to impart a little retribution."
"This has nothing to do with the girl, then?"
"I didn't say that. But the fact remains we still have a chance to wound a dangerous enemy. We should take that opportunity while we can. And once the ferals are dealt with..."
"We'll see," Hayden said, as he pulled back.
Distance Camp.
A few people were consoling Durango, who was still sniveling. At times he would roll up into a fetal position. At other times he would stare off as if he were catatonic. Most of the Distantians seemed traumatized by today's event. Those that weren't in the battle had still been deeply affected by it. I held no pity for them. What were they expecting? We were at war. I, along with Cedar, kept a vigilant watch out for the Pharaoh's return. Tallow was pacing around, nervously fixing and repairing any weaknesses he could find in our wall.
At some point, no matter how safe our defenses, we were going to have to leave. We had provisioned for 3 days, but at the pace some of the people were going through them, maybe not even that much. I couldn't fault them much for that. They were holding more food than they'd probably ever had in their lifetimes, and to tell them to ration it now wasn't going to work. Subconsciously, I had to figure most didn't think they were going to make it through the night, so better to die with a full belly. The sun had nearly set when the ferals once again materialized from the tree line. "Everyone up!" Tallow shouted. Groans immediately became gasps, which in turn changed to murmured, forlorn speech. Some of the people had not even grabbed their weapons. Either they had forgotten everything they were taught, or they were simply intent on defeat. "Tallow!" I got his attention, then pointed to my sword. At first he had no idea what I was talking about, until he looked around. "Arm yourselves," he reminded them. "Maybe if we don't, they won't attack. They'll leave us alone," a wisp of a boy said from the back. "Those that they hunted down were unarmed. Should we ask them if the ferals might not attack?" "Winter, please," Tallow beseeched. "No, Tallow, I don't think these people are getting it. It's fight or die. The ferals will not hear any of our cries for mercy. We stand together or we fall together. It's as simple as that." The wisp reluctantly picked up his blade. I turned back to see if the ferals had moved. They had not, but the line had grown in size as more and more of them came out. "What are they doing?" Cedar asked. "I think they're trying to rattle us," I told her. "Well, it's pretty effective, then. Let me know when they come. I've got to know if Charles proposes to Destiny or to Hope." "You're going to read? Right now?" Cedar's head bobbed before she sat back down and grabbed the book from under a rock. I was thankful for the fullness of the moon, as it illuminated them perfectly. The ferals were standing still and making no noise. The Distancians had seemingly lost interest when they had not charged immediately. I don't know what the cue was, because it was not vocalized, but the ferals went from standing to running full out. "Up!" Tallow shouted. "For distance!" He raised his sword. The replied cheer was lackluster at best. Distance had never done much for us except prepare us for death. "For Distancians!" I shouted. That got a little more rise. We began to hear the sounds of footsteps as they padded on the ground. The ferals waited until they halved the distance before they began to scream. Blood-curdling vocalizations assailed our ears. I found myself matching them decibel for decibel as I jumped back upon my rock. I immediately became a target as one of the ferals locked onto me. A warhammer in his hand, he pulled it back in preparation to strike. He jumped. I swung, the steel of my sword arcing across his broad chest, slicing him through his breastplate. A large swath of skin peeled back and fell away, as did he. He was screaming in rage from the wound. Another feral came up to my left. This cut was cleaner and deadlier. As it struck the side of his neck, an arterial spray gushed from his collar, splashing up my leg and over my knee. A thrown hammer nicked my ear. I could feel blood dribbling down my neck. The one who had tossed it felt the bite of my blade through his belly. I pulled the weapon away, a sucking sound issuing forth as it came free. His hand immediately went to cover the hole as I sliced him open from sternum to belly button. Ribbons of intestines spilled onto the dirt like thick worms. I could tell Cedar was next to me, but to turn and look to see how she was doing would have been impossible. In certain spots, ferals had breached the wall. We were surrounded. Fighting was happening to my front, side, and back. I could do naught but defend my circle of space. It was mine. To lose it meant my life. "Ah!" Cedar screamed. My heart momentarily ached for the loss of my friend. "He stepped on my book!" She sounded angrier than I ever remember hearing her. Her blade was a flash of silver in the night as she made the feral pay for his transgression. Again, Without any visible or verbal cue, the ferals acted as one. This time they pulled back. My chest was heaving. My blade, my clothing, and my skin were dripping with a heavy coating of blood and gore. Little of it, I noted, was my own. "Is that all you've got?" I shouted to their retreating forms. "You all right?" I asked Cedar. She nodded. I frantically looked around for Tallow. He had dropped off the rocks and was tending to the wounded. "Why are they leaving?" Cedar asked, as she wiped off something better left unidentified from the cover of her book. "They were testing our strength," Tallow said. "Are you all right?" he asked, looking at me. His eyes let me know just how worried he was. "You're bleeding." "I think I'm fine," I said. But in fact, I was covered in a variety of nicks and small cuts, not to mention a glancing head blow that had nearly knocked me from my perch. I looked down at my body. It was leaking crimson from a dozen places. When had all this happened? "Durango, get your useless butt up and start helping," Tallow kicked the boy's form. Durango had found a small outcropping and had hid the entire time. Are they gone?" he asked, uncovering his face. Tallow roughly dragged him out. "Get the dead ferals out of our fort and away from our area. Tomorrow we'll bury the Distancians, if we can." "You want me to go out there?" "Oh, now you don't want to go out there." Tallow shoved the boy. "They've stopped for now. We need to get these bodies out of here." I sat down, suddenly feeling drained of all my energy. Cedar handed me a clean shirt, soaked in some water. I absently wiped away a fair amount of the grime, exposing even more cuts than I originally thought I had suffered. I rested my head against a rock, my limbs leaden. While I was fighting, I thought I might never sleep again. Now, mere minutes later, I think I could have slept through the night. "We lost 7. Tallow would come up to me. "How many ferals?" was my response. "Don't you care?" He seemed disgusted. "Of course I do. How could you even ask that? We'll mourn them when and if we can. Right now, they're not my primary concern. It's the other 89 still standing that mean the most to me." "Because they'll protect your life?" He meant it as a barb. "Yes," I answered honestly. "We'll all be protecting each other's lives. So how many ferals fell?" 42. My eyes widened. "You were probably responsible for half of them, Winter," Cedar explained. She went from pride in our accomplishment to horror-stricken in an instant. "Look what they did to my book!" Cedar held it up. The spine was ripped in two. Klondike Camp. "Not bad," Hayden said from his vantage point. "It was merely a probing, you know that. Are you so sour, Sarah? It was still more than we expected from them. We are wasting time and resources. Are you in such a rush to clash swords? The Hylians, I can assure you, are not sitting back waiting for things to happen, Hayden. So little faith you have in me, Serant. While you were pouting about my maneuver here, I was informed by our long-range scouts that they found the Brutons and the Hylians' encampments." "You kept this news from me. We must strike." "Relax, my friend. I have put another plan into effect. Now you will ask what, I will save you the effort. I had a squad dress themselves as Brutons. They killed a Hylian scout and took off, but not before they allowed the remaining scout to follow them to the edge of the Bruton encampment. So, while we're here, the Hylians and Brutons will be fighting, as will the Distancians and Ferals. I will not doubt you again, Hayden." Sarat was smiling from ear to ear. Distance Camp. I'd cleaned up to a reasonable facsimile of what I normally looked like. The night was calm, the moon and the stars shining brightly. I'd promised myself I was only going to shut my eyes for a moment. When I awoke, it was with a start. A slight breeze moving from east to west raised goosebumps on my exposed flesh, but that wasn't what got me up. It was the shock of silence No crickets chirping, no night birds calling. It was as if the world was holding its breath for an expectant release.
"Cedar, wake up,"
I shook her softly. Her book fell from her hands.
"Clarissa is an evil b—"
She sat up, shaking the fog from her head.
"What's going on?"
she asked in the same soft tone. I pointed up and slowly began to stand. She did the same. When we were able to look over the rocks, the sight was an unwelcome one. Hundreds of ferals were slowly making their way toward us.
"Start waking everyone up. Quietly," I added.
If I knew my friend at all, she'd just start kicking them. She got Tallow first. I could hear their muted talking. Tallow shot up quickly, and the ferals froze as his sword struck a stone and rang out into the night.
"Stupid," I said under my breath.
The sound died down. The ferals stayed frozen for an instant longer before resuming their stealthy approach, albeit this time a little faster. I think they knew they'd been discovered.
"Distancians, up!"
There was no time left for secrecy. The ferals added their screams to my own. Cedar ran back to our spot, quickly putting her book in her backpack, and hid it under an outcropping as best she could. "Anyone touches that, and I'll slice their hand off." I laughed at the craziness of her statement, but not the fierceness with which she had uttered those words. Time appeared to slow down as the ferals came forward. I'd completely forgotten about the advantage I'd been honing for nearly a year. It was oversights like these which were going to get me killed. I'd succumbed to anger, an emotion that crippled my ability, along with fear. I could make out the ripples in their legs as they moved effortlessly toward us. Weapons, which had been hanging by their sides, were slowly brought to bear. Four individuals had their sights set on me. I had my sword up by my face. The timing would be close on the second and third, but the first would be long dead by the time they arrived. At least, long dead by my reckoning. In real time, it would be less than seconds. Time had slowed to the point where I could see the faint push of air as a heavy stone was hurled at me. I turned to the side. The stone grazed across my stomach. When I came back to position, I made sure to lead with my sword. I pierced the first of my attackers through the throat. He died, strangled by his own blood. One of the ferals coming my way must have seen something he didn't like, as his muscles were straining to stop him before he was within my reach. His hesitancy sparked something within me. I decided I wasn't going to wait for him to get here. I jumped down, the impact traveling up from the bottom of my feet through my ankles, knees, and hips. He was in the process of turning away when I slashed through his side, exposing his internal organs to the chill of the night air. As he was falling, the third man, determined to kill me, crashed his knee into the head of his dying comrade. It was enough to send the swing of his obsidian blade far short of my jugular. I brought my edge against the back of his hamstrings, severing them easily. The battle mask he wore across his face turned into a teeth-shattering clench of agony as his tendon rolled in on itself. It was impossible to tell how long this barrage went on. Within my own personal cocoon, the measure of time was interminable. Klondike Camp.
"You still think she is just a normal girl?" Hayden asked.
"I would be lying if I said I did," Sarah replied begrudgingly. "But I still don't see what this changes."
"She is a savage beauty. Beauty with the ability to deliver death with fluid grace. She is no mere distancian. She is no mere human. There is more there, and I am determined to find out what it is. Prepare the archers to fire."
Sarah still had his doubts. But he had to agree with Hayden. The girl was defying her own death with every movement she performed, some seemingly almost precognizant.
"She's trouble, that one. I don't need the power of prophecy to know that," he said to himself as he went to the waiting line of archers. "Archers, ready!" he commanded.
The line of men drew back on their bowstrings, arrows at the ready. He kept them in this position longer than he should have, as some began to shake minutely as they fought with the heavy draw.